Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Mandy McAllister is a multifamily real estate investor, mindset ninja, eternal learner, coach, and connector. She followed volleyball to Mercer University in Georgia, where she was awarded top graduate in marketing. And soon after, she moved to Chicago to do a master's in economics and began work at the Chicago Board of Trade. She also then transitioned to medical device sales, where she was a perennial top performer. And after many years of chasing commission, she made it her mission to secure financial freedom for her family. Her real estate expertise includes repositioning underperforming assets to increase cash flow and value, and her passion is to help others define their path to financial freedom, especially women, through her platform, Aspiring Women Achieving More. Mandy, welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. I'm excited to be here, Sam. Thanks for having me.
The pleasure is all mine. I love Chicago, by the way. I was born in Indiana, lived in Indianapolis, and I would drive to Chicago just to eat pizza and then turn around and drive home. So I miss Chicago.
You did it right, because Chicago's wonderful for those things, not wonderful for buying real estate, in my humble opinion.
Since we're on that, you know, the same questions I ask everybody who comes on the show. Can you briefly tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? How did you get there?
Sure. The must invest in real estate bug bit me when I was 19 years old at a party in college. A friend was explaining, her dad bought the house and she rented out the rooms to our friends. And I thought, you get to keep that money. That's the best idea ever. So 19 years old, I knew I wanted to do this thing, and analysis, paralysis, reading, learning, got myself all the way to 35 when I bought my first fourplex. And then not only did I not die after that acquisition, it was a little fourplex by a school here, state school here in Illinois, it cash flowed $1,000 a month. So I really found that it's the action where stuff starts moving forward. So grew the portfolio from that, you know, four to, you know, I started buying the smaller multi, six, 10, buying into syndications. And then last year, this time, started acquiring in the 50-ish range. So did a 53 and then a 47. And now we're about to close on 104.
That is fantastic. I love that. So last year was the first time you closed on anything bigger than 10 units?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. I think of myself like incremental investor. I like to prove to myself that any mistake I'm going to make with my own capital, so that I know what I'm doing when I'm going to take on other people. So we're just venturing into that right now.
Yeah. I mean, that translates, of course, across a lot of industries. I mean, prototyping, testing out, designing it first, and then, you know, seeing, okay, what do I need to fix before we actually ship this out to the public? Mm-hmm. You know, kind of the same idea. So I'm certain that your investors appreciate that approach as well. Before we dig into the types of deals or how you took them down, you know, we get to talk to a lot of people on this show that do that. But I want to dig more into, you know, your bio here. You said you're a mindset ninja. What does that mean?
So what I mean by that is I pretty much actively try to figure out how to outsmart myself in whatever it is that I'm doing. Because I think women especially are these perfectionists who, especially high performing women, we're great, good little girls. We got straight A's and we raised our hand and we sat and waited our turn. There's a ton of data that support that women need to feel 100% ready to stretch into a new role, whereby men only need to feel 40% ready. It's 40 or 50%, something in that realm. So how do I change my thoughts to work for me rather than against me? So that's kind of what I mean by mindset ninja.
Work for you rather than against you?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, internal dialogue is something that happens. You're the person who talks to you the most, whether or not you believe it. You know, you are the most influential person who talks to you all day long. So if you can tweak what it is that you're saying, actually, I coach high school volleyball too. Like I had this conversation with a girl yesterday that, you know, what are you saying in your head when the ball is coming towards you? She's like, don't screw up. Well, what are you going to do? Don't think about a pink elephant. You're thinking about a pink elephant, right? So you've got to really kind of tweak your mindset stuff every step of the way to get the results you want.
Interesting. So what were some of the things mindset-wise that you found in yourself? You said, I've got to tweak this.
Well, think about like this path of 19 to 35 that I couldn't find the bravery to buy a friggin' $120,000 fourplex. the transition into that was like overcoming a lot of fear stuff, overcoming a lot of like fear of judgment of other people who matter to me. But also then, you know, even going from the 4 unit into the 50 unit that we acquired last year, that was in the middle of COVID, right? So a thing that really helped me there was at the time I was reading a lot of Stoic philosophy and this idea of really getting comfortable with the downside. Oh, wait, I can really think through that our economic vacancy break-even point is like 46%. We can be 46% of the units not paying and still be able to pay all of our bills. Oh, well, we're in COVID and we know the people who are losing their jobs are like bartenders and manicurists, the service people, the people who cut their jobs, computer programmers, cops, nurses, those people. I can just go to look at what it is that they do for work and decide at-risk job, not at-risk job, and getting comfortable with that downside and noting that I had the 46% wiggle room, but only 10% at-risk jobs. It felt like a no-brainer when I could tweak it.
Yeah. And I love that defining the risk, right? Like you can define the risk and suddenly the big scary thing becomes much more manageable.
Mm-hmm.
That is really cool. What else? What else were some other things when you think of being a mindset ninja have been some, you know, things you said, hey, I had to overcome that and this was how I did it?
You know, I'll say I'm absolutely a work in progress. And I found, I think everybody is.
Yeah, I said, which of us are? And if you tell me you are, I probably don't want to talk to you.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's still stuff to this day that I'm working on, but a lot of like the, and I think that this is so like, I mean, I think it's everybody, but like the mom guilt stuff, the time. So I think parent guilt is a thing. I think mom guilt is its special flavor. A thing for me, mindset ninja, I guess, that the way that I chose to start looking at it was if I go 100% all in when I'm talking to Sam and 100% all in when I'm coaching my volleyball, then I never have to be sad that I'm away from my kid or that I should be doing something else because I'm showing up exactly where I need to be all of the time. And when it's time to play Legos, it's time to play Legos. You know, I go all in on that too. So that has really helped remove a lot of that problem so that I could move my own dreams forward. I'm showing my kid by example that, you know, pursuing your own dreams is an important thing.
Yeah. And that, you know, having the one just awareness that maybe, you know, you weren't present and saying, okay, I will be 100% present in those playing with Legos, in those, you know, coaching volleyball or talking to me on a podcast, which, you know, I super appreciate. What were some of the things you did in order to not just tell yourself, okay, hey, I'm going to be present, right? It's one thing to say, I'm going to be present. And then there's some really, I think maybe some steps I'm guessing here, because I don't know, that you've had to take to say, this is how I force myself to be present.
Time blocking was a huge one. I do read a lot or listen a lot because I'm dyslexic and I consume books via Audible, but Cal Newport stuff. So if you read any of his work, so Deep Work, or A World Without Email were two really informative books that helped me kind of shape my approach. One thing is I block every single morning that, you know, between 8 and 11, that is my time to get into deep work and really get move your life forward stuff done. Now that I've left my W-2 like 6 weeks ago or so, it's kind of this whole new world. But we were talking offline that, you know, I bought a planner that helps me focus. It's called Full Focus Planner. Like it helps me figure out the three big rocks for my day so that I can move stuff forward. I'll also say during that time, I turn all notifications off. Like it's not even like I turn my ringer off because I'll hear it buzz and I'm like, what's going on? Does somebody need me? But if I turn on like I'm asleep, timing, then I get a lot more done. I can get into real deep work.
Yeah, that's amazing. Those little foxes that steal the grapes, if you will. Yeah. You're like, oh, hey, that's interesting. Next thing you know, you're engrossed in a 20-person text conversation. And then you look back up at your computer and you go, crud, where was I?
Exactly. And then it takes you time to get back into that deep work. If you could just stay down in that deep work and knock it all out, you get so much more done in so much less time.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And in this age of distraction, there was a one that was, I'm not read World Without Email, though it sounds, I like the title. I think it was called The Perfect Day Formula or something like that. And he had suggested you don't read email until after 2 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Just don't open it. Don't look at it. Read your email after 2 p.m. Like, gosh, that's kind of hard to do.
Yeah.
Because it does. I mean, those are the things that suck you in. So that's really cool.
I want to add something to that, if you don't mind, because having done day job where I was on call, like a punchline to my life is I chose not to pursue medical school because of a conversation with a doctor who said, you don't want to do this because you're going to be on call and that's going to suck. So I ended up in business and was on call for doctors in business, right? So to be able to move forward a side hustle while single momming in that, you know, drop everything and run on callness that is medical device sales, I really had to get that time blocking stuff became even more important. And I would always keep a list. So I would drive a lot for my old job and I would yell at the voice message thing in my phone, hey, Siri, put, you know, call Sam on my to-do list. So that when it came, when I had the 20 minutes, the half hour of sips of time, which isn't ideal, but then I would know exactly what to go do rather than waste any time going to get stuff done. That helped a lot when I was overbooked.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And talk about a frenetic environment to work. You worked at the CBOT, you know, the Chicago Board of Trade. Like that was a harebrained kind of just everywhere experience, no?
Oh my God, I loved it. You have to be like organized in thought. And I think that's one of my superpowers. It's funny because my brother became an emergency room physician. And I think it's the same like gene, the same kind of like need to this, then that, and figure that out and get this person, you know what I mean? So that was really a lot of fun.
When you say organized in thought, translate that into what you're now doing in real estate.
There's a ton of moving parts in real estate. I'll tell you, in my early 20s, when I was at the Board of Trade, my old brain worked a lot better than when I kept a tiny human alive. But the idea of, you know, being able to silo out the stuff that I need to do. And I think a lot of this came or helped me. I refined it because of the reading that I did that I just mentioned, that I can macro blocking. One of the things I'm doing is macro blocking. Okay. Well, aspiring women achieving more stuff happens on Tuesday. All right. If you want to talk something that's not urgent on that, I'm going to set it to the side, deal with that on next Tuesday. And I'm going to deal with everything that's today's day. So really getting surgical on what it is that you're able to work on and focus on.
Yeah, that's a challenge. And again, we've spent a lot of time here chatting, not a lot, but the first few minutes of this podcast chatting about this. And I think it's something that it is a skill and it's a tough discipline to get yourself in that groove.
But it can be learned and it can be improved. And just because you're not good at it today doesn't mean you'll never be good at it. It's just, it takes some hacks, it takes some effort. But, you know, I'm here to tell you that I'm a lot more focused and a lot more able to move stuff forward than I was even, you know, 6, 8, 12 months ago.
That's fascinating. I love that. One of the titles that, you know, you've given to yourself is you're a connector. What does that mean? And why do you focus on that?
So what matters to me is helping people meet their goals. If I can help enough, was it Zig Ziglar? I forget. I'm going to butcher it. But if you want to be worth more money, if you want to earn more money, you just got to help more people fix their problems. Mm. Right? So that plus, like it feeds my soul to be able to help people get what it is that they need. So whenever someone tells me, oh, I'm working in short-term rentals in the Poconos. Oh my gosh, I just talked to 3 other people doing short-term rentals in the Poconos. Can I make an introduction? Now they're able to compare notes, you know, maybe use suppliers that are the same, maybe get economies of scale. So, you know, number one, it feeds my soul. But number two, it helps me move my business forward.
Right. Yeah. I love that. I love that. Absolutely. Yeah. You're probably right. It was Zig Ziglar. And I've heard it said some other ways from other people as well. But it's like, if you want to solve your own problem, solve somebody else's first. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then yours will take care of themselves. So that's awesome. I love that. You've given us some great, you know, just kind of mindset, tangible skills that all of us, I think, struggle with in any business, right? This is not just real estate.
It's kind of the human experience, right? Like, and especially given the day and age that we live in, our attention is monetized by multi-billion dollar corporations. So to be able to get it back. But what's funny is like Zuckerberg's kid will never be on Facebook. You know, like all of these big creators of the world don't do the consumption of the stuff that they create and they keep their kids from consuming it too. So, you know, how do I take it back is difficult, but necessary if you want to move stuff forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I love that. Let's talk about your real estate holdings, right? So you said that Chicago is not a place to invest. It might be a place to come get fat and eat great pizza. which I'm happy to do, but you said it's not a good place to invest. So where's a good place to invest? How did you pick it out? And then how did you guys start taking down deals?
Yeah. So in my humble opinion, I feel like I am a buy and hold long-term investor. That is my interest. I don't want to be a flipper. I don't necessarily want to do a ton of syndications because those hold times are usually 3, 5, 7 years shorter term than longer term. So what I need to feel good about a long-term hold is that there are a lot of people living there, that there are a lot of jobs that are going to help people keep living there and being able to pay their rent. So if I look at the state that I live in, Illinois, I live in the south suburbs of Chicago right now, that we have had a significant mass exodus since COVID. If you look at the heat map of where people left since COVID, first state, the state that lost the most people, New York. Second state, Illinois. We beat California, right?
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And every MSA in Illinois has shrunk in population quarter over quarter since like I've been looking. So, and that's been a lot of quarters. So like we're talking like Bloomington, Carbondale, all of the MSAs, right? So anyway, I want population moving towards me. It's the, you know, I coach to this a lot. Like when you're picking a market, you got to think about like, okay, you're in a canoe. Do you want to like, you're going to get where you're going, right? So do you want to go upstream where you're going to be, you know, have a lot of brain damage and be super tired and it's going to take you way longer? Or do you want to position yourself with the current? Right? So you're going to get there faster and effortlessly, right? Your girl Mandy wants to do things as effortlessly as possible. So what yielded my decision of where to go bigger was, okay, I want to be able to get there and back before dinner, right? So that was a criteria. So Midwest, that I could be on a 45-minute flight or a 2 or 3 hour drive, that'll put me down there and back by dinner. So that ended up being Kansas City and Indianapolis. So I would, oh, Kansas City, this deal, and oh, Indianapolis, this market, and I could do 0.02% of my money over here, but did you hear what they were doing? So I FOMO'd my way to inaction for probably 2 years. So when I talk to the people I'm helping get started investing, we really get super granular on figure out exactly what you're looking for and exactly the market. Get, you know, drill it down maybe even to a couple of zip codes. So because the more precise you are in what you're asking for, the more likely you are to get it. So once I kind of settled on Indianapolis and Indianapolis only, last summer, July of 2020, we went under contract for a 53 unit. As a joint venture, me and two guys. And then subsequent to them, we've done another 47 in Indiana.
That's awesome. I love that. I love the idea of get there and back by dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that. And you have that capacity, like you said, going to Indianapolis, or that you have that capacity from base, especially flying out of Chicago. You can get basically anywhere direct, I would think.
Well, and I moved to the south suburbs. So now I'm really only two and a half hours from the outskirts of the MSA. So it makes it even easier.
Right. Yeah, I love that. One of the things you said about your investing criteria is that you want to be a long-term investor. Mm-hmm. A lot of the syndications that we see are, as you suggested, 3, 5, 7 years, not uncommon. How do you finance? And, you know, I guess one, how do you finance longer term deals? And are you bringing on investors?
Mm-hmm. So the whole reason I started, or actually it kind of started as a happy byproduct, but then I did make a personal decision to be investing with my own dollars first, largely because many people coming up in syndication that I had spoken with that also had day jobs, I would ask, what do you want to see to be willing to leave your job? And they would say, oh, I get this acquisition fee and that disposition fee. And then all I got to do is 4 deals a year, and then I can quit my job. And I thought, oh my God, you have to go find 4 doable deals in a year to feed your kid? What happens if there's not 4 doable deals? Because as a sales rep for the bulk of my career, I know I show up with a different energy if I'm way meeting my number or if I'm really short of it. Like that's a different like energy. So I want to position myself, and I have positioned myself, to only do deals if they're really good deals, right? So I have a floor of income that provides for all of my needs to live, which is why I was able to, quote unquote, retire from my day job 6 weeks ago, and then now swing for the fences on stuff that I really believe is a good deal. So once I went a little larger with joint ventures, I ended up, I run a meetup out of Chicago, and my business partner and contact of his that he'd had for some time, that contact, his problem was he, you know, owns hotels and was getting crushed during COVID and wanted to place some capital into multifamily, but didn't have bandwidth. Well, his problem was he needed to place a lot of capital. Our problem was we wanted to go bigger and didn't have a lot of capital to place, right? So just partnering with people who had a different problem that also wanted to be active in the deal is what helped us take down that 53. The 47 was a total of five of us. So, you know, if you have some amount of capital, some liquidity, it's a competitive advantage. I feel like doing joint ventures helps you enjoy a lot more of that upside and not feel pressured to sell if you don't want to sell.
Right. And having investors on with that longer term, you know, especially if you're joint venturing and you say, hey, look, you know, we don't plan on selling this.
Mm-hmm. It's easier to align in the long-term idea with three or five people versus the 40 people you would need for like a $10 million raise.
Right. That's a downside to syndication, is that the business plan really is not just contingent, but it forces the hand of everybody to sell, because the majority of people are going to want the equity payout because they want to see their money double in 5 years. And all right, we sold this, but unfortunately, you're probably also selling the milk cow.
Exactly.
No, there's no more milk after you sell the cow, which is not good, really. I mean, maybe it is for certain situations, but that's one thing that we've seen a lot in the syndication space, is that exact thing where people just are not able to solve that equation of how do we hold this for longer than 5 years.
And another thing on that too, is another reason to go a little smaller, in my opinion, or that's my result of my decisions, is in this atmosphere we're in right now, we have super low interest rates, super compressed cap rates, right? There's something that I'm not hearing a lot of people talk about is we're all kind of taught to go for a big value add. Like you add the value, you get out in 2, 3, 5, 7 years, right?
Right.
If we acquire at a 4 cap and we, you know, in 5 years time, it's completely possible that that 4 cap goes to a 5 cap, right?
For sure.
Like completely possible. And you probably have debt that expires at the end of that 5 year that you're going to have to refi or do something. So think this through with me, Sam. So the formula to figure out a value of a commercial building is net operating income divided by cap rate equals value, right? So if I have the denominator that increases from a 4 to a 5 cap, that's an increase of 25%. The law of small numbers, right? So if I'm going to increase my denominator by 25%, I also have to increase my numerator, meaning my net operating income. I have to operate at 25% higher rates in order to just break even on my value.
Right.
I feel like if you don't have a longer term plan or a contingency plan B, C, D, it's something that gives me the willies a little bit right now.
Yeah. And you bring up a valid point. And that's, I mean, we're in an odd time in the market. Of course, no one has a crystal ball, but it's that odd time of like, well, if we have serious inflation and if interest rates rise, does that necessarily mean that cap rates also go with it? And there's arguments on both sides of that equation. Like, well, yes, no, maybe. And, you know, we're in no man's land. So I think that's really smart, especially if in your situation you go, I really don't care what the exit price is. Am I still making money?
Exactly. And it's more so just having those contingency plans, because I see a lot of syndications that hit my desk for passive investment, because I do passively invest in deals. The business plan is we're going to thread the needle. We're going to refi year two, and we're going to make sure that this happens. And we know that we're going to increase rents by 20% because we are magic. Like, that makes me nervous. I need a bunch of different contingency plans to feel comfortable.
100%. I love that. I love that. Mandy, thanks so much for taking the time to chat about your business, chat about mindset, chat about really the things that you're doing. I love it. I love your growth strategy. Yeah, you're doing awesome things. So keep it up. Before we jump into the final four questions, is there anything else that's really top of mind you'd love to share with our listeners?
If you're listening and you are in the no man's land that I was in from 19 to 35, figure out what it's going to take to get yourself into action. Because no matter how funny I think I am, this is entertainment if you are not figuring out how to move something forward. So do yourself a favor and move yourself forward.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, this is not entertainment. This is how you move forward. That's straight talk. Appreciate that. Question number one is this. If I give you $20,000 to invest in real estate, you had no previous real estate investing experience, what would you do with it and why?
I don't have a lot of regrets in my life. but one is that I didn't house hack. I didn't buy a fourplex and live in it. I wish I would have had the wherewithal and the confidence to not need to live in the coolest neighborhood in Chicago that costs however much to live in that I couldn't afford to buy a fourplex. I would have bought a fourplex and lived in it.
Yeah, brilliant. I love that. Question number two is this. If you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
I'm telling you, analysis paralysis. You're at some point, you're going to know all that you can know. And you've just got to understand that you got to let go of that branch and take a risk, because the mechanics of doing anything is like 20% of it, 10, maybe 20% of it. Once you understand that, 80% of it, 90% of it is just figuring out your head. So don't get in your own way.
Love it. Question number three is this. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
So I feel like this matters to me a lot. I joined a mastermind that this is one of the pillars that we work on is giving back. And the coaching, volunteering as a 14-year-old volleyball coach is one of the greatest things. That a chance to impact girls in this part of their lives is, I can't wait to know if I've had the impact that I hope I do. But also the Aspiring Women Achieving More platform, we're helping women figure out what's the next right step for them every single day. So both of those things matter a lot to me.
Absolutely. And yeah, on the 14-year-olds, they're at an inflection point.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know anybody, myself included, didn't play high school sports that still can't go back and say, oh yeah, like that person was instrumental or influential. So if you're wondering, I'm just telling you, you probably didn't know this, but you're having influence. So keep it up.
That just gave me a goosebump. Thank you for that, Sam.
Awesome. Love it. Last question for you, Mandy. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Yeah. Find me on my website, mandymcallister.com. It's a catch-all for everything. My investing arm, Aspiring Women, the mentorship stuff I'm up to. Find me there.
Awesome. And for those of you who are listening, McAllister is spelled McAllister. So mandymcallister.com. Mandy, thanks so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Yes. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.